Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I am really, really happy to have our special guest with us today, author Elaine Grohman. And Elaine works with angels. So I know that some of my dear close friends are tuned in today listening because they were very excited to hear this show and very excited to know more about a soul who has dedicated her life in communicating with angelic realm to not only allow us the privilege of connecting with our divinity, but showing us that there is faith and hope, we're not alone, that it's very easy and very simple, and what a gentle soul. You'll absolutely love her book. It's called The Angels and Me, The Experiences of Receiving and Sharing Divine Communications. I cried the first three chapters of this book. I love this book. This woman's got such a gentle energy. Without further ado, let me present her to you. My guest today, Elaine Grohman. Elaine, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, Lisa, thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Oh, this is wonderful. And like I said, I have been talking about you to a lot of my dearest and closest friends that this show is upcoming because I know so many of them are angel appreciators. So we have a pretty lively listening audience today. But I want to just introduce our audience to where your soul generated this knowing from. Because as I was reading it, there were so many instances throughout the book that I resonated with. You and I are both were raised Catholic. However, we moved from the dogma of Catholicism and into more of a spirituality lifestyle. But what I really was moved and literally sobbed was as you were telling the stories of first the loss of your brother Brian and then the loss of your mother and many others who you lost in your family. So let's go back to when you were a young girl. You were 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And I lost my own mother about 10 years ago. So even though I was an adult, it was very raw and very painful. But I can only imagine being 13 and losing your mother at one of the most fragile parts of a young girl's life. So let's go back at how that really developed and formed and evolved you.
Okay. Well, let me start off by saying I am originally number 7 of 9 children. So
wow.
I came from a very large family, a very loving family. And I'm so grateful, Lisa, and I tell people all the time, I thank God every day I had the mother I had, even though I had her for 13 short years. She was such an example of love and of fairness and of integrity. And I would say that she was a healer, although she would have never called herself that. She was just a genuinely loving, charismatic person. And being number 7 of 9, as you can imagine, there was a lot of work to be done in a home like that. And
right.
So with 11 people under one roof, and our brother, Brian, who you mentioned, was handicapped with muscular dystrophy. And he was actually, Lisa, the first poster child in the country for muscular dystrophy. So our family was very, very involved with, first of all, helping people who were disabled be able to have as bountiful a life as possible, even though we knew it was going to be a short-lived life. And he was diagnosed when he was 5 years old, and Brian was just 3 years older than myself. And I was very close with him, very close. And we knew that he was going to die, but it is such an unimaginable event. You know, you can know that something is going to happen, but when it really happens, it just shatters your world.
Sure.
And I was very privileged to be with my brother his last conscious day, all day. And he was quite an inspiration. He was intellectually very, very gifted, but his body was failing him. And although he had severe scoliosis and his lung capacity was impaired, he had the voice of an angel. He actually, several days before he went into the hospital, he actually sang a solo at the school choir, and there was not a dry eye in the place. it chokes me up right now even thinking about it. Sorry.
Right.
But he was just extraordinary. And he died on June 3rd of 1968. And through, 2 days later, on the morning of his funeral, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. So every face I saw was in shock. And it was very hard for me to know whose pain I was seeing, whether it was mine or it was the collective or whatever. And as you had mentioned, I had been born and raised Catholic, and so I always assumed those angels that I could see painted on the walls in the church, if I could talk to them, I wouldn't. I was amazed that there was the concept that they wouldn't talk back. So I just, you know, I just assumed that they were genuinely listening. So in 1968, as you might imagine, you know, it was not very common for someone to talk to a child about their grief.
Right.
So my way of coping was, thank God I had my siblings who are still to this day my best friends. And but I went out into nature, and I would just talk to God. And I would talk to the angels, and I would scream at him and yell at him and be mad at him. And I knew he could take it because he had big shoulders. But
right.
I didn't know that I could take it when 14 months later our mother died very unexpectedly at the age of 47, leaving behind eight surviving children. The youngest was only 3.
Wow.
So
wow.
The wounds kept coming. And my life was just kind of turned upside down. But I have to honestly say, Lisa, that what held me in good stead was the lessons that she taught about how to be loving and how to be encouraging of other people. And in my own little fearful heart at that time, I tried to be the best person I could be to honor her. And it's hard to even articulate how much she influenced people's lives. But to give you an idea, my brother's funeral was the first time in the history of our town that they ever had to have a police escort for a funeral.
Wow.
And the second one was my mother.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I have goosebumps on that.
So it was just it was such a beautiful tribute to their life.
Right.
And
right.
To have seen the vast number of people and to know how their short lives made such an impact. And I vowed to do the same if I could.
Well, you're off to a wonderful start. I mean, your presence, your energy, your essence is truly felt through the written pages of this book. And you know, I knew from reading it, you are touched by an angel in reading this book. It's one of those reminders that no matter what religious upbringing we have been taught, angels seem to supersede all dogma and belief systems. So, even Jewish faith and all different types of religions acknowledge that angels exist. And so with you bringing this book out and this awareness and this teaching and your work and your healing, it not only provides that much more light upon the planet, but it enables the angels to work more freely among us. And that, Elaine, is such a gift. Thank you for that.
Oh, totally my pleasure.
it's like I was reading your book, it doesn't sound like, many people in work like this, we don't choose the work chooses us. And it looks like in this resonance, the angels have been working with you. It was just a matter of you hearing that ring, 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 that it was time and ready to go and work with them, because
it
looks like you were being prepared from a very early age in not only dealing with such heartbreak and such grief and such loss, but to also experience such unconditional love and beauty and that gift of warmth and connection and connectiveness. And not everyone who is gifted with a large family or a small family has that ability to say that. Many of us can't say that we're friends with our siblings, or that our family was loving, or, you know, there's so many people out there who have struggled in that dynamic. So such a blessing that is for you as your foundation. And then what a gift to have that love as you're going through such grief and loss. But what a gift you are to all of us, that you are this constant light of reminder of essence, of energy, to help us all regain our connection with the angelic divinity. And it, you know, as you were moving through and you were talking about some of your experiences and some of the people that crossed your path and the experiences that you went through even when you were working within hospice of those who were dying and passing, did you find over the years of being open and more receptive to the angelic energy that more information was given to you, or was it a complete download immediately and you just kept getting more and more and more download, or was it a development over time?
You know, I have to say honestly, Lisa, I used to think that there was something wrong with me when I was a little girl, you know, because I used to think, well, how do I know this? You know, or why is an adult coming to me and asking me questions about something that I have no frame of reference for? And I just, it kind of shocked me sometimes, the things that came out of my own mouth. But it was always, it was never harsh. It was always loving. It was always I always tried to, even if it was quote-unquote difficult information, I always tried to couch it in the embrace of love so that they could see that sometimes you have to be firm with people when you're telling them something, but that doesn't mean you have to be mean. And
right.
So I think it was, to answer your question, I think it was a developing thing, and to this day it is still developing. It's 56 years old. I hope when I'm 96 years old, I'm still learning. You know, that there's so much to know. And, you know, but the core of what it is that they're always showing me, whether I'm at a birth or I'm at a death or I'm talking to a physician or standing in front of a group of medical people, my goal when I ask, when I'm being given the opportunities to speak. I always ask, just before I called you today, I said, please let my words be your words. Please let my words be understood so that it touches the heart of whomever is listening. And it doesn't mean that they're going to have a poof epiphany. It's just going to let, you know, maybe bring some warmth to an area that has been frozen solid in grief or frozen solid in anger or whatever it happens to be. Let it be a little nugget, a little pearl. And that's what I'd hoped it would always be.
Well, I think you're providing much more than a nugget, my dear.
Well, sometimes I have to throw boulders, you know.
Well, you know, sometimes those boulders are really big wake-up calls, so that the blessing is even that much more. So
you're darn right.
And you know what I really loved about your writing is it was so heart-centered and so heartfelt. It was not up in the head in where, you know, it needed to be articulated in an intellectual level. Not that it wasn't an intellectually based book, but it was a much more heart-centered, feeling-centered book. And for me, those really resonate because it takes me to my heart and it drops me down into where my feelings are more empowered by I found myself nodding. And when I find myself nodding as I'm reading, that means I'm totally in vibe with you. I am resonating to the highest level with you. So it was one of those real needed reminders, very timely reminder for me.
Right.
Now, you also discussed about your own developing intuition because you had this, you call it a lucid dream, which let's start first with, please explain to us what lucid dreaming is, because it's something that's coming up a lot these days and many people are unaware of how to define a regular dream from perhaps a lucid dream.
Okay. There's actually several different kinds of dreams, Lisa. There's a precognitive dream, which might be something that helps you to see what might be happening. There is dreams where we're rehashing what has happened during our day, so that the creation, the divine, and spirit help us to understand what is it we were supposed to learn about a particular event or interaction. But then a lucid dream is actually an out-of-body experience. And it is a visitation almost, if you could use that term. And the quality that makes it unique is that it feels so real. And you're not simply an observer. you're a participant. You're hearing your own voice. You're touching, you're sensing, you're smelling. Everything is involved. And it is so incredibly real that when you do wake from that lucid dream, you expect it to be continuing.
Right.
So it is just so important to know that when we do dream, we are letting our body physically rest, but we're many times astral traveling to other dimensions that are helping us to understand the purpose of what's going on in our life so we
right.
can get on with it.
Right. And you had a very powerful lucid dream with your mother.
Yes, I did. And it would at that particular time, I was, you know, there's certain events throughout the year that, you know, makes me really miss her all the more. You know, when my own children were born, when my children were married, when my children had their own children, you know, those are incredible experiences that you want to be shared with people. And at this time, I was just particularly thinking about her. And in this dream that was so vivid, I was walking towards what appeared to be a dark cave or a dark area. And behind me were my three sisters. I have four brothers, one who's deceased, and four sisters of my birth family. And my sisters were behind me, and we were walking, and I was kind of in the lead. And from this dark area, like this cave, our mother came up to us and walked right up to me, and I just said, "Mom, what are you doing here? You're dead." She
right.
said, "Oh, honey, I'm not dead. I've just been lost for 27 years. And I said, I turned to my sisters with just this astonishment on my face, and I said, "Oh, my God, we haven't been looking hard enough." You know, she hasn't been dead. She's been lost. And, you know, how could this be? And we just hugged each other, and we just, it was so real and so palpable. And then later, I had after that dream, several weeks later, well, I don't remember the exact time frame, but shortly thereafter, I had gone to see this intuitive. And I said to her, you know, it was probably a week later, and I said, "You know, I want to see my mother. If you can see my mother, I want to see her." And she said, "Well, honey, she wants you to know she just came to you in a dream." And she said, "To tell you that it wasn't she that was lost. It was you. It was you that had been lost for the last 27 years." And I just sobbed. Because I knew I had been. I had felt this tremendous loss for 27 years, and I was just trying to forge through it. And I realized that it was okay for me to finally grieve.
Right.
It was
right.
okay for me to finally grieve. Because at that time of my mom's death, there was younger siblings to help. You know, I had a 9-year-old sister and a 3-year-old brother and a father who was distraught and, you know, so much. And I realized that that coping in that time was my way to heal myself, too. But it was time for me to say, it's okay to let this sadness be released. And so she helped with that. And it had been 27 years since her passing, and I didn't even put it two and two together. You know, like, why? No, you've been lost for 27 years. She goes, and I thought, oh, my God, it's been 27 years since she's been dead. And that at that time was 40, when I was 40. I'm now 56 years old.
Wow.
So that helped me start on the journey of saying, okay, Lane, you can't be a scaredy-cat anymore.
Right. And actually a little bit empowering, not a little bit, but quite a bit empowering, because in knowing that your mother is right there with you, you know,
always
supporting you and loving you, it's like, who better could you get as a cheerleader? You know, there's this angelic energy and your mother's energy, and she's passed and she's working with the spiritual dimensions and helping you. How divine, just beautifully divine. It's a beautiful story, Elaine. It truly, truly is. Now you move on into taking some intuitive development classes, and the awareness that came from you during some of the exercises was pretty profound. Is that right?
You
had kind of an aha, opening, awakening that went on through some of those experiences. Would you like to share some of the, just a simple tool or a simple basic tool that you learned that really helped open you up to sensations or sensitivities You talk about that one, I remember, where you write a little bit for 15
yeah.
minutes of your...
I'd be happy to share that if I can. It was...
Certainly.
I was taking a class with a woman locally here in Michigan, and one of the exercises in developing your intuition was to really concentrate on your powers of observation. So what she instructed us to do was to be in a room where there wouldn't be any distractions, no television, no ringing phone, no one coming in, and with pen and paper, sit and write for 15 minutes continuously everything you observe, the sounds, the feelings, the tastes, the sensation of having your body sitting on a sofa, you know, what it felt like to have your clothing touch your body, if you were uncomfortable, if you, whatever it was, even if it was repetitive, it didn't matter, but you were not to stop. And so after that 15 minutes of period of time, you would just put it down, put the pen and paper down, and just close your eyes, and for about 10 minutes, just be silent. Just be completely silent and allow your mind to go quiet. And obviously your mind is working, so you're still observing things, but you're not following them. You're not tracking them necessarily like you were before. And after that 10-minute time, Lisa, I opened my eyes, and I have to preface it by saying it. I would always ask for God to give me the ability to see more clearly. And as I opened my eyes, honest to goodness, there was a dove in flight in my great room. And its wings were, it was flying from one corner of the room across the room, and as it got three-quarters of the way, it just disappeared. And it was so moving to me. I was frozen. I was absolutely frozen because I could see every feather. And all I could do was say thank you. Thank you for allowing me to know what is beyond what we observe. And I want to preface it also by saying, Lisa, I think that one advantage that I had is that my whole life, even from my time of my childhood, I was an artist, and my mother would take me to, when she was living, I remember one time she enrolled me in a high school art class. I could not touch the floor as I sat on my feet. I was the only child in this class, and she wanted me to explore what I was observing. And I remember her one time taking me to an art store, you know, and kids would crave to go to a candy store. She took me to an art store, and she said, honey, you can have anything you want. And I just looked at her. I went, really? And she said, what color do you like? And she would bring home barn wood and rocks and all these things. She'd say, here, what do you want to paint on that? What do you want to paint on that? And she'd hang it.
How cool.
And she'd give it away.
What a cool mother.
So then later in my life, I actually studied art. I went to a very prestigious art college in Detroit called the Center for Creative Studies. And I taught there for a while. So I was trained as an artist. So I was trained from a child to be an observer. But
right.
I didn't know that that was going to help me in my future life.
Right.
So,
well, it's like you've taken on a few different spiritual mediums here to let spirit speak through you. First your art, and then the angelic work and the healing work. I mean, it's
right.
you definitely honored your right side brain. You've definitely honored that intuitive creative gift.
Well, you might be interested in knowing, and maybe didn't know, but all the calligraphy that's in that book, The Angels and Me, that's my lettering.
Oh, you're kidding. That is beautiful. No, I did not know that.
I'm a lettering artist. That was my specialty for years.
Oh,
and
you do beautiful work, truly.
It was such a joy to be able to sprinkle all that throughout the book. And then as a graphic designer, my degree was in graphic design. So I designed the whole book. I wanted to have complete creative responsibility.
The book. There really is a vibe with this book, I will tell you. And it's not just because I don't, you know, I think that there's so many angelic books out there, and I've read many of them, and they're wonderful books, but there's not necessarily a vibration. And as soon as I picked this up to read it and sat into reading it, it was very difficult to get distracted and put it down and do something else that my motherly routine may require of me. But it definitely has an essence and energy. You know, you can tell that this was put together with such love, and the love vibration is the predominant energy that vibrates from it. So not only through the words, but the essence of it, and that was truly felt by me. So I find that you being an artist is such a natural, incredible gateway for you in regard to the spiritual work, because I don't know of one artist in my personal life that is not innately connected. And it just enables you to have that ability to see beyond, like you just said, beyond what you can physically see. You're seeing beyond that dimension. And you were also talking about, this brings me to another area of your book where Judith Orloff was a very big influence for you when you went to go see her speak. And she, in fact, saw the Virgin Mary behind you, standing behind you. And I've noticed that the presence of Mary has come in with many people personally with me lately and within clients, and her energy is very strong on our planet. And can you talk a little bit about your connection with Mary and how you feel her presence or her energy, or and why she may be showing herself to more people today?
Yes, I'd be happy to, because I think that as a child, having such a loss of my mother, who I loved so dearly, I think I know I prayed to Mary all the time, but I never liked to say the rosary, quite honestly, because it seems so repetitive. I wanted to just talk to her.
Right.
Just talk to her as if I were talking to my own precious mother. And I know that Mary is around. I feel her around me all the time. And her presence is here so palpably, along with Kuan Yin. But because of the Divine Mother's, the need for the Divine Feminine in every person, male and female, to come forward so that we can begin to nurture ourselves. And who better than an expression of that divine maternal love than Mary?
Right.
And, you know, she never sought out to be anyone special, but she was because of her humility.
Right.
And her unbelievable, steadfast courage in the face of great tragedy. And to be willing to help us see that if we are going to really embrace this age of Aquarius, which is the age of balance, it is the time of balance, of insight and awareness. It is the time to allow that which has been very patriarchal and very presumptive in its dismissiveness of half of humanity to say, this will be no more. And Mary stands up and says, be a woman. Be fiercely a woman.
Right.
And what I mean by that is to be willing to be strong, but willing to be compassionate also. To be willing to use the power that is an innately of divinely feminine aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about this just last night that, you know, women have been marginalized by religion primarily.
Yes.
And because of that, I believe any system that does not support humanity is failing because of that very fact.
Yes.
And we have to be responsible leaders in our homes, in our own minds. We have to be responsible. And that's why I think Mary is so prevalent now.
And do you feel that her presence being so visibly seen and felt and known and talked about, and the divine feminine being such a prevalent force upon our planet and recognized more freely and openly, is part of humanity gaining more access to their own unconditionalism, or their ability to at least tap into that ability to feel and be love without reciprocation? That it's,
absolutely.
You know, you know, as you were saying earlier, it's not just for the women, it's for men and women to tap into their compassion and their unconditionalism. And that is, you know, the embodiment of Mary signifies and shows us that that all-encompassing love. And, you know, I saw the essence of your energy, I saw as I read. So if you can, I know you could grasp it. The audience is probably, you know, got a little bit of a quizzical head, but I saw your energy as I was reading the book, and I could just feel the presence of Mary around you. I could feel the presence of the angelic kingdom around you. Is there a specific sensation? As you described in your book, all your senses are heightened, and you hear things, you see things, you feel things. Is there a specific angelic or guardian angel or hierarchy or angelic being that you resonate with more? Like you have, you know, there's Michael, Uriel, or Raphael and Gabriel as the archangels. Do you differentiate between the angels when you connect with them, or is it just like open forum and whoever wants to show up kind of comes in?
I always ask for the honorable ancestors.
Okay.
And those that are of the highest vibration of love. And I would be very presumptive to think that I know them all, and I don't.
Right.
But I do find that Mary is around a lot. Archangel Gabriel in particular is around a lot.
Okay.
Because Archangel Gabriel is the angel of communication. And my job is to be a communicator. My job is to help people learn how to communicate, which is the essence of what we need. If we can't communicate with ourselves, the need to love, how can we possibly do anything else? And it is, to communicate is the most important aspect of our own life, of our thinking, of the way we behave, the what we do to and for ourselves. Even what we're willing to eat is self-communication. What we're willing to say is inward and outward communication. So I find that Archangel Gabriel, but many other beings, I find that there's a lot of Native Americans working with me.
Okay.
And that is probably because of where I live, which is in Michigan. And this was sacred land. The whole
right.
of Michigan was sacred land to the Native peoples. And they understood balance before it was stripped from them. And I think that that is, and they were very much a matriarchal system, believe it or not. Many of their chiefs were women. And women were considered in their governance, if a law or a tribal law was enacted, or I should say, no tribal law could be enacted if it did not support children and women. That was the first criteria. Mm. So there's so many beings around, and I find that there's also, I'm always shocked at the beings that are around me.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure in different circumstances you're pulling in different energies or more, or you know the strength and the power of them.
Right. But I'm always grateful. That I think is the most important thing, is I'm so grateful because I know I don't know. I know
right.
that I don't know. So when if I am presumptive and I think I know the answer to the question, then I'm already shooting myself in the foot. You know,
right.
because you have to come in with an open mind.
That's right, and that humbleness really keeps you connected and grounded into where you are more able to remain open, because by being open and not knowing, you don't know who's going to come in or what the message is going to be. There's no, you know, that's the connection, is the faith that they're coming in and knowing that it could be any message from anywhere.
Right, right, and to not make judgments about it, you know, because...
Now,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Not make judgments about it.
We make so many judgments in our own mind based on what we have learned. And so I feel very strongly about looking beyond religion, although I think that religion has its place if it is ethically done, if it is done with the original intent, which is to help people know their own divinity. If it is not, then it's off course and it really isn't doing what it's supposed to do.
Right.
So I try to be very absent of judgment if I can, to be able to hear clearly so that I don't misunderstand something.
Right, right. And before I get into a little bit of talking about how we can connect with our angels, I'd like to discuss a little bit more about your volunteerism and your work within hospice, because I know how very powerful that experience can be. And you told a story about one specific individual, and it always intrigues me how people are in their last phases of life, because there's many emotions that come bubbling up to the surface. Sometimes it's disbelief, sometimes it's denial that they're even dying, sometimes there's a great relief or a deepening in connection with others. Other times there's anger, there's unresolved anger that comes out. And you spoke about a man, I believe you called him Joe in the book, mm-hmm. but it was a man who was in hospice, and even the nurses kind of were telling you, don't bother going in there, he's a very angry man, you know, you don't need to deal with that. And you said, no, he's not angry at me, let me go in and see what I can do. And very unconditionally on your part, very lovingly and angelic-like, you went in to this gruff energy. And you even spoke about how you could feel the anger in the room. So let's talk about, because I think that sometimes when people are going through terminal disease and illness and or they're at that phase in life, there's a tremendous amount of unnecessary guilt that either they're feeling or it's been projected upon them. And, you know, maybe we can help diffuse that or at least bring some understanding to those who may be in the presence of someone who's dying and is angry, better able to cope with those emotions and not take it personally. So
sure.
Can you...
Well, let me share the story about Joe, if I can, and what happened.
Certainly.
But I want to say after that, if I can, if you'll remind me, that it was a hospice experience that actually brought me into the healing work.
Okay, great.
So when I was actually working in a facility, and I was my position was as the volunteer services manager, so... In a nonprofit hospice, you know, there has to be volunteer support. So one of the things that I did was, as I was at the hospice facility, I would go to introduce myself to see if there was any needs that we could help to facilitate for themselves or their family in any way. That was my job. So if a patient was cognizant, I would go in and introduce myself. So as I was preparing to go into this gentleman's room, I'll call him Joe, the nurse stopped me. And she said he had just literally had just been signed in. He had just gotten there. And the nurse, you know, a very lovely woman, said, you know, I don't think you might want to go in there, Elaine, because he's very angry. Why don't we let the social worker and the spiritual care people take care of him? And I said, well, I'm going to let him make that decision. I'd like to just go in and introduce myself. And if he certainly isn't wanting to speak, I'm not going to force myself on him, but we'll give him the option. And by the way, I don't think he's mad at me. He hasn't met me yet. So,
right.
You know. So I went in, and he was indeed a very gruff gentleman. He looked like he had had a very hard life. He was very, you know, very gnarled hands and very lined face, and just looked like he had not always been very gentle with his own self. And as I went into the room, I asked him if I could come in, and I'd have to delete the expletives, but, you know, he essentially said, well, why won't you come in here? Nobody else will come and talk to me. So as I sat down with him, you know, I tried to have a sense of just being aware of what is going on here. And this gentleman was actually, he was furious that he was still alive. That was the problem. He was furious that he was alive, and he felt that God was punishing him. He wanted to die. And he couldn't understand why he felt that he was suffering. And as I sat with him and talked with him, I kept hearing Lisa's repeat over and over in my mind. Tell him he must forgive his brother. Tell him he must forgive his brother. Tell him he must forgive his brother. And it just wouldn't go away. And it wasn't that I was hearing somebody else's voice, but it seemed so out of the blue to me. I literally remember turning around to think, well, who the heck is saying that to me, you know? And I finally looked at him, and I said, Joe, do you have a brother? And he just went off about this brother. Oh, he was the worst SOB he'd ever seen, and he just hated his brother, and on and on and on. And I kept hearing, tell him he must forgive his brother. And I said to him, do you remember why you're mad at your brother? And he could not remember.
Mm.
And his brother had been dead for 40 years.
Wow.
And it was for 15 years before that that he was mad at his brother. And all of a sudden, they showed me, and I use the term they constantly, they showed me in very quick, rapid order, every person he met after he chose to be so angry at his brother, he never saw that person. He never fully saw anybody after that, because everyone he saw through the veil of anger.
Wow.
And we talked about, you know, trying to reminisce about what was the actual cause, and he realized he couldn't remember why. And he started to cry. And he took his gnarly hands and asked me if he could hold my hand. And I said, of course. And he just said, I can't believe I don't remember why. And I said, well, maybe you could forgive him for whatever that was, and maybe you could ask him to forgive you. And he did. He said, well, how can I do that? I said, just say it. Just say it. You can say it out loud or you can say it silently. It doesn't matter. It's still going to be heard. And so he did. And as it was time for me to go that evening, this happened to be the last hour that I was at work that day, and I said, well, is it okay if I come back and see you tomorrow, Joe? And he said, well, I wish you would. And he said, can I give you a hug? And when I gave him a hug, and he hugged me back with great strength, and he whispered in my ear, I have not touched another person in 5 years. And I just did everything I could not to cry in his arms, because I thought, this is his journey, not mine.
Right.
And so the next day when I came back, I went into the nurse's office and I asked Mary, who's the nurse that had stopped me the day before, and said, you know, how's Joe doing? And she looked at me and she said, he died last night, Elaine. And I said, oh, my God, I hope I didn't do that. And she goes, I hope you did. I hope you did. She goes, he was a completely different man when you walked out of that room. And I just went, oh, my God, thank you. Thank you for that experience.
And I'm so honored. And it was, you know, it's an honoring for you, but what an honor you are for him and those you touch, because what he was gifted with was someone to come in to, you know, get into the core of his being and love him unconditionally. And he may not have experienced that in his entire lifetime, where somebody could look at him and say, okay, you've been crusty and angry for 55 years, but you're still loved. And he got that from you. Mm. And that is an incredible gift. If everyone that is living and walking on the planet could experience one person to love them unconditionally, even a stranger who can give a kindness, what a beautiful light this world would see, because it would be something that could actually change the dynamics of how you interact in the world. And that's the true blessing of angels touching angels. It's the true gift of why people like you are here to help us touch one another.
Well, I feel very strongly, Lisa. Thank you for saying that. That was very kind. I try very hard to help people see their own humanity,
mm-hmm.
so that we can see we're in this together. And in the last 11 years, I've been very privileged to work with two local medical schools, helping people in medicine understand what energy medicine is. And I remember one day in particular, I was invited by this physician to come and give a talk at their rounds. And I was, of the 180 people in the room, Lisa, I was the only one without a white coat on. And I walked up to the, when it was my time to speak, I walked up to the microphone and I tapped on the microphone. And they, I could see they're all very busy looking at their Blackberries and, you know, being very important. And I leaned into the microphone and I whispered very quietly, "I want to tell you a secret." And they all, I got their attention in that second. And they all looked at me and I said, "Not a single one of us are getting out of this life alive. So why don't we start helping each other?"
Ah, amen.
And it just changed the energy of the whole room. Everyone's aura turned violet. It was beautiful. It was like I touched their humanity for just a second.
Right.
And that's all you need to do, is you have to bring people back to their own heart.
Right.
But I want
right.
to share with you what got me into this, if you don't mind.
Please, no. Go ahead.
After my mother had died, my aunt, who was my mother's sister, was very close with us, especially when my mother was living, and even continuing on. And my life continued to get very hectic because when I was 16, my father remarried a widow who had 7 children. So there was 8 of us and 7 of them. So my number became 12 of 15. So needless to say, there was not a dull moment. There was not a dull moment. So many years later, many, many years later, my aunt was dying. And she was in hospice. She was signed onto hospice. And this was my first hospice experience. And she had been signed on at the local hospital and was sent home to die. And her prognosis was about 2 weeks, but she ended up lasting 6 weeks. And in that time, my siblings and I would go to help as much as we could because they don't do everything. They just supplement the family's care. And they do certainly all the medical attention that's necessary, but they're not there 24 hours a day. And so on this one day, I went to see my aunt. And my cousin, who was her primary caregiver, was the same age as myself, and she was exhausted. She was a single mom raising 3 children by herself, taking care of her dying mother and all of this. And I just said to my cousin, I said, "You know what, honey, you need to get out of here. I don't care if you sit on the front porch for an hour. You just need to get out of this room." Because she was hovering around her mom. You know, she was afraid to go to sleep because she was afraid she was going to miss her death, and she was getting sick.
Right.
So I said, "I promise you, I have a good set of lungs. If I need to call you, I will. But otherwise, just come back when you're ready." So I have a lot of siblings in medicine. And, you know, you always hear, Lisa, that hearing is the last to go. So I just sat down with my aunt, and I held her hand and spoke to her and told her how much I appreciated her and how much she had done for our family, and that if she was ready to go, she could go. And at this time, she was in a comatose state. She was not responsive at all. And the moment that changed my life was in that moment when she was lying there virtually lifeless and opened her eyes as bright as can be and looked at me and said, "I see my sister." And I said, "Darling, you go to her because she's going to take good care of you." And she closed her eyes, and I felt this in the room. I felt this whoosh. And I know now, I knew shortly after that, I was privileged to feel her spirit leave her body.
Wow.
And a few days later, I was so moved by that, I spoke about it at her funeral. Mm. And the hospice chaplain came up to me and said, "Have you ever considered working for hospice?" And I said, "Hell no, I don't want to do that." "I don't want to do that. I'm a big scaredy cat, for God's sake." But before I knew it, I was a hospice volunteer, and I was so intrigued by what I felt. I asked everybody I knew, "How can I learn about that?" And as I became a hospice employee, I started to study energy medicine simultaneously.
Wonderful.
So it was the best place for me to learn because I was in the worst-case scenarios every single day.
And that is when we trust where we're being led, our calling is not far behind, and that's a beautiful testament right there to your path and where you're at. And let's talk. I know we've got like 10 minutes. I want to at the end of this question, or after you answer this question, give the audience a little bit of a little tool to tap in regard to how to call in their angels. But I want to address energy medicine because it's such a powerful topic, and in fact we could do a whole show just on energy medicine, that it's becoming more more accepted. I read that UCLA is starting to use intuition with their medical program with certain areas as like a experiment. You know, they're kind of testing it. So there's openness. I know Duke University has a different aspect. I know there's one out in Albuquerque that's more open to the body, mind, spirit vibrations and understanding. Talk to us about what energy medicine is and what it can mean for our future and our healthcare and our lifestyle changes.
If I could put it in a very analogy way, energy, we are every beat of our heart, every enzyme that is created, every thought that we have comes from energy. And energy motivates and activates every part of us. And it is evident in our neurological system, which is all energy and electrical impulses, which is energy. And what we're beginning to understand is that the dynamics of energy has frequencies. So energy is a dynamic thing that can have either a low frequency or a high frequency. A low frequency is where illness is where disturbance is, where anger is, where confusion is, depression is a low frequency. So if I were to make an analogy, Lisa, imagine someone who is depressed, grieving, or ill is analogous to a car with a dead battery. That car mm-hmm. has everything it needs but enough energy to activate that engine. And we are standing on a living, breathing organism called Mother Earth that is a giant generator. Right. And my job as a healer is to be the jumper cable that allows energy to move through my body into someone else's to activate their body. And it is very simple, it is very gentle, it is very powerful, and it is helping the body help itself, even at the moment of death. So that I have been at many, many deaths. I have been blessed to be at the births of my own grandchildren. And it is a dynamic that is not really understood right now, but is being looked at very seriously, because medicine in its genuine original form, the language of the word medicine came from the native peoples. And the word mm-hmm. medicine did not mean pharmaceutical. The word medicine meant anything that honored life, anything that promoted life. A smile could be good medicine. A kindness mm-hmm. of any kind could be good medicine.
Interesting.
And we've mixed up the terms. Medicine does not mean pharmaceutical.
Isn't that interesting? Wow. How far we've fallen.
Well, that's one of my missions in life is to help people to be educated about the own power that is in their own body, in their mm-hmm. own hands, and in their own heart.
It's a beautiful calling, Elaine. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Now, how can we connect with our angels?
First of all, I want to say you're never disconnected.
Right.
One of the things that I am very adamant about when I'm working with my clients or teaching at all, the imperative of being grounded. Because mm-hmm. by being grounded, you're physically connecting yourself to the earth and allowing your own frequency to raise. When your frequency raises, it's like changing your frequency from that of a transistor radio to a satellite frequency. And all the information that we are standing in and as we are bombarded by all the time can be understood, because any divine message is a high frequency. It is not in the low bands of fear frequencies. So you have to be very grounded in order to do that. And it is very simple to be grounded. The most important chakras in the entire human body, believe it or not, are in your feet.
Ah.
And when you open the chakras that are in the arches of your feet, and it's very simple, all you have to do is sit with your hands on your lap and your feet flat on the floor, your back comfortably straight, and envision the chakras on the bottoms of your arches of your feet as if they were like the closed lens of a camera. And imagine you could see and feel these camera lenses dilate. And imagine that your fingertips are open and your toes are open so that the energy that is spent can be released, just like an exhalation. And because everything in our body is rhythmic, our pulse is rhythmic, our neurological impulses are rhythmic, our respiration is rhythmic, and energy is rhythmic. And it has to come in like an inhalation and leave like an exhalation continuously. So as we do that, it does multiple things for the body. It raises, you feel, many times people feel a tingling sensation in their body. That is energy moving. As energy moves along the neurological system, it stimulates the nerve ending, which is the nerve is designed to respond to a stimuli. And when that happens, you have a whole host of things that happen. You get what's called vasodilation. Because as you have a higher frequency of friction, friction creates heat, heat creates a dilation. So you're getting more oxygenated blood to your tissue. Your brain can work better. You can be relaxed. You can be, all of your senses heighten. So the single most important thing that you could do is to be grounded. Secondarily is to ask. I ask every day to be an instrument of peace. And I always preface it by saying, but don't scare me too much, because I'm a big baby sometimes. You know, but you have to be willing. You have to be willing to look at the sorrow. You have to be willing to look at what isn't working, because you cannot change what you won't observe. You can right. only change what you look at and then make a different choice. Use your power of free will. Use mm-hmm. the tremendous gift of free will. So, honestly, Lisa, I ground myself no less than 20 times a day.
Right. I hear you.
So if I'm working with somebody who has cancer, you better believe I better be very grounded.
That's
because
right.
Because I'm trying to raise a low frequency to a high frequency so their body has enough energy to defeat that illness or to let them be released from the illness. I have to know what I'm doing.
That's right.
It's my responsibility to know what I'm doing.
That's right. And how can people get in touch with you if they want some healing work or they want to work with you? I have your website up on my chat room here. It's www.elainegroman.com, ElaineGroHman. Do they get in touch with you that way, or would you like to provide some other way?
I have a lovely assistant who is my daughter, Lainey Rubio. She could be contacted by phone at 248-320-6532 or via email at Lainey, which is Lainie, at ElaineGroman.com. Or certainly people are welcome to contact me or phone. My number is 248-855-3456. Any of those ways is fine.
Wonderful. Elaine, it's been such a gift for me and for all the listeners to have you on the show today. It has been a truly an enlightening experience and awareness and information, and just knowing that you walk among us is such a blessing and a gift. So I thank you for that. You also are scheduled to be with me next month as well to speak about your other book, and we will be talking about that. So, again, I look forward to it and your angelic presence. And if there's anything you'd like to impart upon our audience, we have about 1 minute, but I wanted to thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you. If I can, just to kind of preface the next interview or the next talk, I'm going to read just an excerpt from, it's a Lakota prayer. Wakan Tonkan, great mystery. Teach me how to trust my heart, my mind, my intuition, my inner knowing, the senses of my body, and the blessings of my spirit. Teach me to trust these things so that I may enter into my sacred space and love beyond my fear, and thus walk in balance with the passing of each glorious son.
Amen. Oh, beautiful. What a beautiful thought to leave on. Thank you so much for gifting us with your presence, Elaine.
You are a
God bless. Thank you so much, and I look forward to next month. Have a beautiful week, everybody. I look forward to our show next week, and many blessings. Have a blessed week. Again, thank you so much, Elaine. God bless your work.
Thank you, dear.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.